RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Wednesday morning on RCR is always our Legal Hub morning, and what a lineup today. I'm not including myself in that. Katie Ashby-Coppins is back with us. Hi, Katie. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Good morning, listeners. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And Kirsten Murford. Kirsten, great to see you again, or to hear you again. I can see you, but our listeners are listening.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. Are you all right?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
You're bearing up. We're all bearing up.
Bearing up, just.
All right, I thought it would be a good opportunity this morning to clear a few things up. I think people kind of know what I'm alluding to. There's been a lot of talk in the last, what, week or so about New Zealand's proposed pandemic plan. And a lot has been flying around, and it's been going all around the world, and Alex Jones has been going on about it, and other people have been going on about it as if we're some sort of canary in the coal mine for what is to come. So we're here to bring a bit of reality, but also keep, you know, our critical thinking going as well. So the New Zealand proposed pandemic plan, this is an update, isn't it? It's an update.
Yeah, it's nothing new. The first one was in 2002. Then it was updated in 2017, and this is an interim update for 2024, which they say has been put together in a rush, which is a little signal. So I'd be really interested to see the final plan for 2024. But in terms of the Health Act, nothing's changed. It's been there since 1956, most of it. The policing provisions have been there since 2008. Do you concur, Katie?
But you said rush, which is a kind of a tell. Can you elaborate on that?
It's just the wording. If you were to put a conspiracy theorist hat on, you'd be wondering why there's this interim rushed report and why they aren't waiting for the finalised report. But from a lawyer's brain, just looking at purely from a legal point of view, there really isn't a lot to see here.
Katie.
Look, I agree with everything that Kirsten's had to say. And, you know, I can see that a lot of alarmism is being created around this document. I think that, you know, it's a balance, isn't it? We've got a situation where a lot of the things were, these laws were already in place, and people are feeling a little bit cautious and concerned about what's happened over the last 4 years. The fact that, you know, not even the phase one of the Royal Commission is concluded. They're talking about lessons learned, and I don't think that they should be entitled to independent, well, they're not independent, so they'll be making up their own decisions about what they got right and got wrong, and I'm not sure that they've ever suggested they got anything wrong. So, yeah, look, it's we've seen the last 4 years play out. I think people are concerned that there is the potential for forced vaccinations under these at this stage. It doesn't say that. Could there be legislation that's passed in the future because it's considered necessary? Yes, potentially there could be. We saw emergency legislation that passed overnight under the COVID response legislation. If they were to say that they had a report that that saying they considered the Human Rights Act considerations that they're required to, then this is a forced vaccination is a justified limit on that right. They could actually go to that extent. But, you know, it's a case that this is putting a lot of things together that have been in existence already. But after the last 4 years, I think everyone's got a
It
impacted everyone, didn't it? And so,
even like both you and me, like we're both impacted and always looking beyond what a word might mean.
Absolutely, absolutely. And goodness gracious, that's the only reason why we've come together and probably why RCR exists.
Exactly, yeah.
Because of that. So it is... It's an interesting document. The timings, I think, is interesting. Exactly as Kirsten said, the fact it's interim. We've got bird flu being hung over us with the October summit on it. Vaccines are being talked about, already being rolled out to Finnish people for it. So,
yeah, you talked about words. I'm looking at the MOH words I have here. We live in a highly interconnected and populous world, with diverse opportunities for new pathogens to emerge and generate a global pandemic. Now, 1956 was a long time ago. Most people traveled across the oceans on ships. It took weeks and months to get anywhere. And I guess all sorts of opportunities for pathogens to, in the petri dish of those ships and those methods of travel back then, to do their thing. But we've been flying around in 747s mass transit since 1970. You know, where are the new opportunities? They've been around for decades already. So again, just speaking about words, you know.
Do you remember arriving at Auckland Airport and being sprayed?
Yeah, down the middle of the plane.
God knows what they were spraying us with.
Yeah, back in the days where they were a bit footloose and fancy free with any of the chemicals. But no, that's such an important point. You know, the Act was, a lot of those things came about because you might have a ship arrive and a whole lot of people are very, very unwell and you want to keep that quarantined off. We had quarantine islands for trying to reduce the spread of disease and infections and viruses and the like. But we have also a very transient world and population now, that we also have a very widespread immunity to a lot of things already, because we are, you know, we travel so incredibly much. So I think there does need to be some amendments and some updating, but it just seems like after the last 4 years, a lot of those rules and regulations were open to abuse.
Yeah, and I think the Act was actually put into place for the right reasons. And it does make sense. Like, if Ebola was to come into the country, we wouldn't want everything done to stop it. But also, we have our questions about COVID, about the avian flu, I've been in hospital, so I'm still, my brain's not ticking. So I understand where people are coming from. But that doesn't mean we should all be in a panic. And we think, because there's just so much going on in the world at the moment, I think it's really important that we keep level heads, because we don't want to overreact to a situation and for it to be a nothing. And then when something big comes along, we don't react appropriately. We've got to keep those critical thinking skills in place.
We've already had that.
Yeah,
the cry wolf.
We have. If I was the master of the plan and I really wanted something bad to happen, I'd have people in a complete state of fear before I dropped a bomb. And people seem to be getting themselves into a complete state of fear for this. And I'm just saying, if I was the master, which I'm not, it would be the perfect time to do something. So I think we just actually have to take a step back, level-headed, question everything, but also just be rational as well.
Is it worth going through some of this update, the things that are concerned about? Do we need to elaborate on any of those points?
Look, I think if we were to sort of talk about it, I think that the a lot of the beginning start of it is very much reads like a WHO document. They talk about, you know, 7 million people are dying from COVID, but that number seems a bit too low. So let's make it 15 million.
15.
yeah. And so you've got these numbers, and the basis for a lot of this analysis is on very shaky grounds. And I'll probably do something on this similarly, but this is what's happening, is they're relying on this modelling, and when numbers don't look as good as they could for COVID, then they're utilising all-cause mortality over the period of COVID. And lo and behold, we've got some numbers which are a lot higher, but it doesn't take into account all of the other deaths that were caused perhaps by the public health response, which, you know, cannot be ignored and certainly is significant. Some of the numbers too are interesting in this document. 3,000 people died of COVID over the space of 3 years. That's 1,000 a year. How many would ordinarily die from the flu each year? That's, I thought, some quite interesting numbers that forms the basis. What this is all being done around is the fact that the next pandemic is just around the corner, because there is the promise of it and being pandemic prepared, albeit it's going to cost the world trillions of dollars and New Zealand billions of dollars, you know, and which will detract money and divert it from places that are where, you know, healthcare is needed for actual, you know, it's it's a document that's sort of just setting things up. And I do suspect that it may be setting things up because of what they're anticipating with.
Yeah, and I agree with you with that, Katie. Like with the amendments to the international health regulations and also with that pandemic treaty sitting in the background still to be decided. The timing is definitely interesting, but we can't say anything definitively at this stage. I mean, with our little lawyer brains on, we know what it's like.
No, you're absolutely right. And it is, I mean, but the thing is that some of the flavours of things, which we've all got a bit concerned about, this equity, inclusivity as concepts a pandemic response, you know, we're all in this together. Well, no, you know, healthy people were locked down. Young people were locked down over the last 4 years, a huge detriment. And, you know, where is the analysis and the considerations there for what we will be suffering from for a very, 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 very long time?
And that's the most interesting thing that I'm finding with the reading that I'm doing at the moment in terms of the vaccine, is the saying, well, the young people, especially the young men, they had no risk, which we knew a long time ago, but they're actually putting it into mainstream sort of journals now. But yet it was the young men that are actually suffering from the vaccine deaths. So, yeah, everything just goes round and round on merry-go-round circus. So,
And look, I think that because the problem with this document is it's really come out of time when trust is probably at its lowest. You know, even with a change of government, you know, you haven't changed the bureaucrats, the health bureaucrats and the health public servants. It would be fascinating to know, you know, those involved over the 4 years of COVID, who was responsible and been involved in the drafting of this document and adding to. But it really does read like a lot of the things that we've been seeing coming from the WHO over the amendments to the international health regulation process and the pandemic treaty.
We're not even sure what New Zealand's position is in terms of adopting the international health regulations. And there was also a lot of mistrust when the submissions of the international health regulations were put forward and we weren't allowed the latest document. And, I mean, I wrote to all the parties and got no response. So I don't blame the average Kiwi. I also have mistrust at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you, if you're going to put something like this out, you know that there are people out there that aren't going to buy too much of it. You want to get ahead of that and kind of be upfront and say, okay, I realize that a lot of you are going to think this is us, you know, trying to lock you down again and do things. We assure you it's not. We understand that. This is just the plan for what it is. Has there been any of that?
Not to my knowledge.
Not that I've seen either. It's just you drop it like a bomb and you wait for the responses to happen. And look, there's a lot of people talking about this, and I think that some of it's being blown out of proportion, but, you know, it definitely does say things like mandated measures could include people being required to be vaccinated and, you know, that you can then sort of not step too far through the Health Act and you go from prescribed health product to, you know, police enforcement. So, you know, your imagination can go quite wild and you don't need much imagination, especially what we've lived through over the last 4 years.
Yeah. And especially the fact that if a notice is issued, they can actually keep you in the quarantine or the health district. It doesn't actually have to be the quarantine facilities. It can be the health district such as Auckland until you're tested negative and taken the prescribed, or the preventative treatment, but there's no definition for preventative treatment. So, I mean, there are a lot of questions. I'm sort of thinking about doing another OIA on it, but it's like, how many OIAs can we do, Katie?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I could just do OIAs forever. I think it's the only way that we find some form of, you know, justice, marks. I think the timing's everything, and I think it's particularly interesting, and I think it's just the fact that it's come out and been tabled without any communication. I don't think that, you know, that's unintentional. I think that there's nobody really leading on any of this, and we also have massive distrust in our government and ministers and bureaucrats. It's really, it really goes to the heart of it.
Yeah, really caught my eye.
But there was no talk about this a few years ago before COVID. We were decades without even thinking about this. Not much has changed, really, in the world, has it? Now it's all next pandemic around the corner every year, it seems.
Yeah, well, our last influenza pandemic plan was 2017. And whether or not you could say that was followed during COVID or not, is definitely, you'd definitely have a full 5 legal hub sessions on that, certainly. But look, this has been done at a great rate. There are independent reports that have been done by the University of Leeds recently, and I mean independent, not funded by Big Pharma or those that sit behind the WHO, that actually independent, and they've conducted full analysis of all of the pandemics and say, look, naturally occurring pandemics are actually on the drop, not on the rise.
That's what I'm talking about.
Correct.
You know, this was never an issue till just very recently.
Yeah.
Now it's around every corner.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I think we just had Helen Clark mentioning this morning, everyone needs to be able to have access to the monkeypox vaccine. I'm sorry, Helen, where have they rolled you out from?
Does she actually understand where the monkeypox is?
Exactly right. And have you been to your biology class lately?
Yeah.
Because it's not carried by breath or, yeah. Well, let's not get into that.
There were some cases in Australia last week, 80 cases or something.
Oh, look, and, you know, probably in a particular
Very specific group, yeah.
I'm just about to say probably a very clear demographic of people and, you know.
Yeah. Kirsten, you've been doing clarifications for people who have been sort of flipping off the edge a bit about this. What are some of the clarifications you've had to make?
Well, just people are asking me, what does it mean? Is this new? And so my first post was, no, this isn't new. This has been in place since 1956. In terms of Section 70I, I think it's H, where they can keep you in the district or a quarantine facility. It's been slightly amended, the words. But apart from that, it's the same. The police, which have the powers to enforce, that's been in place since 2006. So there's nothing new here. I mean, yes, I understand why people are scared. I can see the potential. Anyone that's read my open letters to the Minister of Police, etc., knows that I get the bigger picture. But from a legal point of view, we just read it and like there's nothing that new. But I agree with Katie, the timing's very interesting in terms of the background of the amendments to the international health regulations, the pandemic treaty that's being talked about now over there. Also just looking at Project Mercury, which I'd only discovered in the weekend, how they're actually changing the words, which is the Bill and Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefellers, they're changing the word and they cross out the word vaccine and put it with a vaccination. So it's a clear indication to me that they're really wanting to push vaccines into people. They've kind of done the first step and now they're moving to the second step is how I read that, because why would they put out all these nice little tiles crossing out the word vaccines and replacing it with the word vaccinations? So, yeah, I think we're in for a really interesting time, but we've just got to keep calm and not overreact to things.
Keep calm and carry on.
Yeah.
What do we look out for to know that it's going kind of next level? Will there be language that we will be able to identify?
I don't think there'll be a clear signal as such. There's just so much going on with digital ID, the CBDC. It all feeds into each other. Like I'm thinking about going down to the conference next week in Wellington. Another RCR person that you have on a bit and I are thinking of going down, not to be troublemakers, but just to go down and listen and also see if we could get some time with Judith Collins, because I imagine she'll probably be there. But no, it all feeds into everything. So I don't think one day we're just going to wake up and it's happened. It's like it is literally being built around us right now.
And the infrastructure has been going into place for quite some time, and you know, it's been done at much quicker rates than it possibly might have been intended, whether you know, COVID came about accidental release or otherwise. So you know, it is, the infrastructure has been going on for a while. This has been, you know, being able to be identified and recognised by one digital widget has been something that's been in the plans for quite some time. And vaccine passes have international versions of them, are now currently being tested, and every country is going to sign up to it. Otherwise, they'll feel the geopolitical pressure of not signing up to it. And what happens when your citizens can't visit a country because your country hasn't ticked the box?
We had ID 2020, which is old news now. And you've just got to look at the players behind these. And like, once we start to look at it, it actually makes sense. But when I first started waking up, it was very big. But I think one thing that people can really do at the moment is actually speak out in their own name. And if you're a business owner, if you're a lawyer, if whatever you are, by speaking up and out about it sensibly, not making it a huge conspiracy theory, having the facts, it will actually bring more people along to speak about it as well. And it validates it. Because at the moment, we can still call us cookers and conspiracy theorists because there's not enough. You have the same old people on RCR because no one else is prepared to come on. Would that be a fair comment, Paul?
There's a slow thaw going on, but it's drip, drip, drip. I guess the biggest thing was maybe getting a bit of support plugged into New Zealand First to get at least them and into the coalition. But I don't know what that means anymore, if it means anything anymore, personally.
I can't answer that question either.
Yeah.
I wish I could.
I do think that it is a bit of a thaw. You know, it's not, there's, you know, not even a degree of separation now, and you know somebody that's been harmed, and or you're starting to ask questions of, you know, why they might be harmed, or, you know, why is a young person taking their life because, you know, the at least 4 years of it was a big portion of it was already, you know, damaged by the fact that they were locked down and lost social interaction. I think that people are starting to talk about it, but it does need more people talking about it. And, you know, I see the excitement and concern that's caused around this interim report. And there's a bit of a balance to it. Yes, there's some concerns that you should have, and possibly not the concerns that you've necessarily identified, but certainly concerns. But it is also getting people talking about it as well. And so that too is, you know, approach it sensibly rather than in a shrill, alert manner and just say, hey, look, have you heard that there's a new pandemic plan? Isn't it funny time? You know, how do you feel about that? And the Royal Commission's not even finished. And so there's lots of different layers that you can do. And the reason why it was quite easy to, well, not easy, why it was always easy to discuss the international health regulation amendments and the pandemic treaty without having to talk about it in these esoteric concepts, was because it was actually written in black and white. No, they've deleted individual human rights in favour of equity, inclusivity and cohesion. Now, they've now removed that because everyone got upset about removal of individual human rights. But the thing is it's there, it's written down. The same thing here. In the in this interim pandemic plan, it does refer to the requirements for people to be tested, screened, or vaccinated, and that can come about with legislation being implemented, and it may be measures that are used. It's there in writing. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think also because it has been in writing since 1956, people just haven't been aware of it. So it's a great opportunity for people to actually become a bit more political savvy, to understand how these things come about. I don't think many people enjoyed the lockdown. Some will claim they do on my Twitter page. But we need to be looking at these things and holding Parliament to account and actually looking when something legislated. Yes, it may be for a really good reason and a valid reason, but also what could happen if it's the power and the checks and balances aren't there, which were definitely the case during COVID. Like they were writing secondary legislation like it was going out of fashion.
Mm. Mm. And allowing secondary legislation to amend other legislation. So,
Even the lawyers couldn't understand what was going on in the first place. Everyone was like, what?
Oh, I still don't. But no, that's exactly right. And so holding your politicians to account. No, it is not acceptable that you call a gazillion emergencies a year just so you can force through legislation that suits your party's purpose or whatever else you have in mind. Mm-hmm. It is important that we discuss these documents, and I'm glad that there's an awareness of it out there. I think we can just come to it in a much more sage way.
But it's a question of who's aware, isn't it?
Correct. Correct. But the more people talking about it and the more people saying no, remember, the mandates wouldn't have been successful if more than 11,000 medical professionals said, I'm not having this.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to flatten the curve. That's one of the reasons that they describe needing to implement certain decisions when it comes to a pandemic. Look, if the health professionals turned around and said, no, we're not having this done or we don't need it done, then there's no one to do the job, then they're going to quickly resile from any mandate. And look, the Auckland University of Technology has recently done a report, and that report considered the impact of mandates on the healthcare sector and actually made a finding that the mandates were quite ineffective in the healthcare sector and have actually caused a lot more and significant damage subsequent to the mandates that then resulted from having them.
Well, we found out from NZTSOS that the numbers said you had a 1 in 1,000 chance of picking it up in a school classroom. 1 in 1,000. I think, in 600 in a health setting. Mm-hmm. Yet the mandates were imposed and that information was withheld in court proceedings. So there goes the trust. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Trust gone.
Oh, absolutely. And so I think it's for the people to speak out. I was really saddened, but also thought, what a brave family, yesterday when I read that obituary where a young, I think she was in her 50s, died of turbo cancer, and they actually blamed it on the spike protein in the obituary.
Yeah, I saw that.
Lynette Reed. What a brave family.
Yeah, Lynette Reed from her booster. Yeah. Just incredible and chilling, and I'm so glad because, you know, it's been for so long that people have been too scared to say it.
Yeah, but it's time to speak out. Things are moving fast. It seems to be accelerating in many ways. And once again, I'm not trying to be alarmist, but this stops when we all stand up and just say no.
I just wonder if that's possible.
It is possible. It's a numbers game. The problem is we're not getting the numbers because people say, can't do it because of my business, can't do it because of my employment. And that's all very well and good, but in a decade you won't have that business.
That's correct. And the other thing, and you know, I speak and help so many injured people all the time, and they're like, well, I did it so that I could keep my job. And I'm like, well, you can't work now. And, you know, that there's irony in that. No, it's a sick irony. But, you know, they're so sick they can't work. And so you either choose now or choose later. And look, the Melbourne facility is very close to being finished for Moderna, and they boast the ability to make 100 million doses a year. If you don't think that we're going to be hedgehogs required to be hedgehogs for the next couple of decades, then your heads are in the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't do it for yourself, do it for your children or your grandchildren. Do it for the future generations. And be prepared to take a couple of hits. We all have.
Boy, tell me about it. If any of this is imposed, I would be tempted to do everything I could to not comply with any of it. You know? Because I just don't trust any of it at all. I'd much rather take my chances.
Yeah. And look, that's where martial law and things may come in, because people will not necessarily be compliant. But look, this is all being done again in a rush. It's being done very close to what we've just been through. A lot of people are mistrusting, and I think that they would not have necessarily the numbers to restrain people if people genuinely said no.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder what that proportion is now, because we always used to think of it 20% hardcore non-comply. I don't know, there's that middle section that we talked about, and then the fully in the other way. I wonder if they have shifted, how much those proportional numbers have shifted.
Well, I haven't...
I think it's definitely shifting.
I think it's definitely shifting too. And look, I always think to myself, I've never met an unvaccinated person that wished they got vaccinated, and I've met a lot of vaccinated people that wish they said no. And that's a huge, huge number. And actually, that's everybody I talk to, and maybe they're just trying to, you know, I ask them in very open terms so that they feel that they can answer in any way they want to. But yeah, I do feel that there's a huge number, a much larger number now. I think a lot of people regret. And a lot of people actually feel hoodwinked.
Yeah, well, fair enough. They should.
Yeah. You shut down the discussion on it. You force this on people. You say it's safe and effective. You've got politicians giving medical advice, breaching the Medicines Act advertising, and you've got all of these things that just keep coming out over and over and over again, which hold them in the worst light ever.
So there are no names with this updated plan, right? No, like, prepared by so-and-so and so-and-so. No names. There should be names, shouldn't there?
Just double-checking. I think it's just the ministry.
It's just the and the Director General of Health, the current one.
Yeah, but who's been working on it? Are they the same old, you know?
That was what I said at the beginning, Paul.
No,
it'd be very interesting to know who's been working on this.
Yeah. That's a big problem if it is.
Yeah, so Dr. Diana Safati.
The Privacy Act.
We could just, you know, oh, my goodness, no. Let's start crafting that OIA.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to know who they are. I want to know their names.
Oh, no, they only out conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
Okay.
And look, that's the other thing. If this is such a great document, why wouldn't you be proud to put your name to it?
My point, exactly.
You know, if you're proud of what's happened, if you're, you know, the thing is that they're dealing with something that's become so polarizing, and it just goes to the heart of it all, which is a lack of trust.
Yeah, exactly. Where was the press release? Where was, you know, it on that horrible Channel 6 news? Oh, I would have missed it anyway.
Because look what people have done. They've run away with it already.
They have, and internationally as well. So, you know, this has got a lot of international attention. I'm getting updates regularly from all around the place. People are really diving deep into it and wondering how many other countries are utilising this as a template, and how come New Zealand's first? And, you know, it's interesting. It's got legs.
I haven't really been following the local reporting. That's always interesting. Has there been any reporting of this in any way? There might have been quite a few stories, or no?
I haven't seen any.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But we never even had an update that there was a vote on the international health regulations in the New Zealand Herald.
Yeah.
No, there's nothing.
And crickets from politicians. Crickets. Nothing.
Well, crickets imply that noise was made, possibly. I don't think that there's even been a whisper.
We'd expect, given it's such an important topic, given the economic and social impact on New Zealand, the last 4 years, maybe the Minister of Health would have spoken to it.
Mm.
Has he ever mentioned anything about any of this, ever?
No, he did come back on my request for the heart transplant information within 10 minutes of sending my OIA, he came back.
Oh.
I got very excited.
Did he say anything?
It was from Shane himself. But now everything's being transferred as usual and extended. And the most interesting thing was my first three questions were in relation to current policies, to which I was told I was taking time away from the clinicians doing their clinical stuff up at the hospital. And I went back and said, well, I'm sorry, Shane, that just makes no sense. If these are existing policies and administrative person, we better just pull them out.
Mm.
So it makes absolutely no sense in my head.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, no, yeah. No, not even a press release. Paul?
Nope.
Not wow. A press release. Just flopped it on the website. For the Ministry
yes,
of Health,
they do.
219 pages.
We put it out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what they will say is, it's nothing to see here. We've had it in place since 2012. It's just an update. Nothing to see. You know, it's going to be the PR line, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything more to say about this before we're done?
Oh, there's 219 pages, so we could go on forever. but, you know, I think we've captured probably, the key points, which is a lot of this law has been around for a while.
Yep.
And it's not new, but the reason why people are particularly concerned about it is because it's unusual timing, I would say.
That bird flu conference, whatever they're calling it, summit in Washington in first week of October.
October.
And if you look at the breakdown of what they're covering in that, that is scary, I got to say. It is. Because the anticipation of everything gives you the clues. Do you think there's any timing relationship? Because that's not too far away. That's coming up.
Well, this document refers to the current strain of bird flu, which is of concern. It also refers to a few of the other versions of bird flu that have been around. So, look, I think if we can't draw a link in the next year, I'd be surprised.
Because maybe it goes update, summit, boom.
He's hoping not.
I know, but, you know.
Probably possible.
Okay, well. Thanks for coming on again, Katie, and good to see you, Kirsten. Thanks for the work you do.
Thank you.
I know you've been sort of hammering away on the keyboard there.
Yeah.
Doing a great service. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.